Hello and welcome to Pivot to Asia program. My name is John Harrison. There have been various reports about the world's wealthy paying huge sums of money for underground survival bunkers. And they're hugely expensive, these things, and they're specially built and they're usually put in faraway places like New Zealand and Japan, as well as in the United States of America and Western Europe. According to a report by CNN in October of last year, a number of companies are meeting a growing demand for structures that protect against any risk. They're called doomsday bunkers, and they also, some of them offer luxurious amenities, indoor swimming pools and so on. One manufacturer, the Rising Est Company, reports sales increasing for high-end bunkers by 700% since Donald Trump entered the White House. Bill Gates, for example, is rumored to have large, luxurious shelters beneath each of his homes in California and Washington State. So, what's going on? I'd like to talk about this phenomenon with Tate Osaka, an environmentalist, living in the Nelson area in New Zealand. Welcome to the program, Tate.
Thank you very much, John. It's a pleasure to be here. This topic is quite interesting, and I've been following it off and on for a long time. So yeah. Here we have another blip on the radar. Here we go. It's another one. It's happening now. It's in the news, and people are talking again.
Right.
Well, but it's been going on.
It's in the news now, and people are talking about it. But, I mean, a lot of things that are in the news and people are talking about are just kind of passing fads. You know, it's what we're talking about this year, not really based on any on reality, on substantial facts and figures. And, of course, with this particular thing, we don't actually know the full story because these companies are quite secretive. And the people who pay the money don't really want to advertise the fact that they've got a nuclear a war-proof bunker in
right.
their cellar. So we don't actually know the figures. But in your opinion, and according to your knowledge and research, is this, in fact, a passing fad? Or is it truly happening? And if it is happening, is it a reflection of the times we live in?
Oh, for sure. It's a reflection of the times, yes. And the trend is on. It's been going on for a while. And now the big money has made it into a fad within their circles, you see.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a new thing that's happening, and it's caught onto the news. So now everyone and their brother who's, investing in something and has an income worthy of, a couple of million that is expendable in their view, they'll be casting an eye out as their, peers have already done. And they'll be looking at different places. Now, New Zealand, unfortunately, for those of us who are here, is already on the radar now.
Yeah.
Us little small country, 4.5 million people far away, is now, the new destination of the promised land, the Eden that everyone wants to go to weather the storm of the nuclear nightmare or the whatever the chaos is going to be. I mean, everyone has their own different sort of spins on the versions of what could happen. But no, it's been going on. But I guess I don't want to paint the picture that it's all doomsday. I think the news, if you read generally the big picture of news articles and don't focus on any one specific article, you see that there is a truth there. There's a dynamic happening within the survival community, all different sites. You get the extreme paranoid. You also have the people that are looking for a vacation house plus a little bit of security.
Right.
That sort of thing.
Right. The trouble is with this, isn't it, that if you're building these things and it becomes a mass movement, a sort of must-have thing, if you've got enough money to pay for it, then does it not become more likely that you're going to have a nuclear war? the byproduct of it would...
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, exactly. You think about it. I mean, why do people spend $1 million or more on an underground bunker if they're not going to have to use it? I mean, presumably they aren't preparing for the event of a nuclear war. Now, this is kind of rather serious, isn't it?
Yes, it could be the same conclusions. The parallel could be making all these weapons. Certainly, you're going to have to use them.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise they cost money to decommission, and people don't want to do that. They'd rather earn money by using them, and then of course you get the spoils of war if you're victorious in a region. So that's the problem we've got here is provocations are very profitable now, and And the response to that is, rather than address the real issues, people are trying to find a way to run away from it. But we're all connected. Even New Zealand, we're breathing the same air. It just takes longer to reach us. But mm-hmm. the same radioactive ocean is going to be affecting our fish here eventually. And I'm sure there's, you know, a percentage of Fukushima waters in our territory already. Mm-hmm. It's been a few years now. Mm-hmm. So we need to think in a different way. And I get your point. Preparing is not a full answer, as well as, you know, stocking up is not the real answer. That I have a story, if you like, mm-hmm. a friend of mine. I've been in contact with him for 20 years. I was living in Russia. In 1998, I made contact with a gentleman here who's been sort of prepping along the permaculture side, right? I talked about the spectrum. There's a wide spectrum of people. So he's along this community building, something called transition towns. That's the town that's transitioning into the new resistant relocalization, basically, when the electrical grid can no longer be relied upon. Brownouts turn to blackouts and so on. So this is the sort of vision of a group of people. And I can buy into that for certain scenarios. It certainly does happen from time to time in conditions that exist today. So how much more if there's deficits based on whatever reason, energy, war, whatever. So we get back to the story. This mm-hmm. gentleman recently came back from the States because his family was having a flood. So it was an area of flooding. And he was having a discussion with another like-minded person there. You know, like-minded people are all over the world these days in this sense. And the American in this case said, you know, I'm glad at least I'm not in New Zealand because I couldn't live in a place with earthquakes. Uh-huh. To which my friend responded, well, in Christchurch, we work together. You can read all about it. We rebuilt Christchurch. Now, how did that work out in Katrina? It's about the community. When something happens, it's not so much how you're prepared for it, because we're not individuals. It's how you work together as a community.
Yeah.
And I think that's a valid point.
Yeah, I mean, looking at this sort of bunker situation, one immediately thinks that it's something that will be used in case of a nuclear war. I'm sure that's the key selling point. But in fact, thinking about it, one could argue that these things can also be used in the case of another war, and that is a social war. That is not a revolution, I suppose, but a breakdown in society, a breakdown in law and order, perhaps due to a climate change disaster, perhaps due to the next economic crash, which could get completely out of control, perhaps due to the widening gap between the rich and everybody else, or whatever reason. You know, social inequality of one kind or another could lead to mass disruptions. Do you think that's also a factor in these people's thinking, or are they just worried about
of course
war?
It's written about quite a lot. The Reid Hoffman, co-founder of LinkedIn, calls apocalypse insurance. So that could be nuclear, the more on the nuclear war side. But then Robert Duggar, who's a hedge fund trader, Tudor Investments, said something about America's heading towards a Russian Revolution scenario. So these sorts of things happening. And the social disruption, again, is touched upon by Robert Johnson, who's the hedge fund manager of the Soros Fund. And he said that you have to take a private plane to to a place like New Zealand, but bring your pilot's family with you. So this sort of thinking of social, you know, you need to have more than just a bunker with food. You need to have a support system along with that. And this, it goes on and on. These guys are talking about all these different dynamics. And you're right. There's a social side. There's disease outbreak things that come up. There's climate chaos that comes up, and the bunker producers are working overtime, especially the ones that are producing these multi-million dollar bunkers.
Yeah.
So you brought up Rising S.
It's for them, it's a real field day, isn't it? And of course, there's so many different aspects to this. There's also, I suppose, a religious aspect to it. I mean, the name of this company is the Rising S Company, where I understand that the S refers to Jesus. So there's a sort of...
I couldn't get that from the title, but in the logo, there's three crosses over the S. So yeah, I caught that part.
Yeah. I mean, and then you've got this sort of fundamental Baptist, I suppose, mentality, sectarian, yes. Sectarian kind of interpretation of Christianity, that the judgment day is coming, you know, and the chosen few will be saved. And one way of making sure you've got your seat in a journey to heaven, you know, not hell, will be to pay $1 million and be safe in the bunker while everybody else roasts. You know, I mean, that's...
Yes, take the Bible with you.
Take the Bible with you, you know.
You know, I have no problem with people who believe in different things, but there is an aspect of these traditionalists who can go off into their little groups and get very one-sided in their thinking. And unfortunately, that's taken hold of the Christian community. I'm sure there's other communities as well that have the same problem, these cult sort of ways of thinking. But no, you're absolutely right. What to do about it? I mean, the company Rising S is reported 35 underground bunkers shipped to New Zealand. And that's just one company.
Yeah.
And he said that he reported that two came through an area that's nearby here where I am. I'm in Nelson. Picton is 2 hours away by car.
Yeah.
And that's a weavy road, too. But I saw here that the port of Picton says no such underground bunker came
That's
through.
Right. That's right. Because I read some articles about that, and the local authority denied the fact that these things have been built in the area, or even they passed through the area,
right.
Completely denied
and then,
it. And I was wondering, are they being paid off or something, you know?
Well, I think they might have been not aware. It could be just shipped in as a container, just a regular container, and it might be done by stealth on purpose. I mean, obviously, if someone catches it, then they might try the payoff route. In New Zealand, it's a little bit more difficult than it would be in other countries, because we pretend we're first world. And actually, to a large degree, we are, you know, pretty close to Australia in most respects. We strive to be anyway.
Yeah.
But the district consents manager is quoted as saying that he has not seen any applications for any bunker, and one would be mountainous in order to be able to put something in the ground that you live in, under the ground, which has, you know, you got to have compliance for that. Plus, you're going to live in it. And if you're going to seal yourself in it, he said it would be a mountainous application process. And he's definitely not seen any of that. So it's
but
just
nevertheless,
a matter of time before a neighbor says, I see a doorway in the dirt. Go and investigate it.
Right.
And there'll be a lot of fines and...
Okay, well, let's talk more about the situation in New Zealand in a minute or two after a short break. Welcome back to Pivot to Asia program. My name is John Harrison. Today I'm talking to Tate Allsaker, an environmentalist living in the Nelson area in New Zealand, and we're talking about the new trend for the very rich to build their own nuclear bomb-proof bunkers. It sounds bizarre, but it's happening. Now, you started telling us, Tate, about the situation in New Zealand, that the 35 have been imported into your country just by one company.
One company.
In the space of 1 year, or in the space of 5 years, or what time period are we talking?
He didn't say that, as you suggested before the break, it's hard to get data on this. I'm sure it can be done. It just would require a lot of time and some interviews, probably 3, 4, 5 interviews of people in the know would start painting a pretty good picture.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, apart from the sort of, you know, the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings sort of image, and, you know, people building little Hobbit type shelters, which I suppose are like bunkers, aren't they, in a way?
It's happening too, sure.
Why on earth are people building bunkers in New Zealand? I mean, New Zealand's a long way away from a lot of places.
True.
And if a nuclear war starts, it might happen in the next 5 minutes. I mean, who knows? Will we have time in 5 minutes to get in a plane and fly to Wellington and get another plane?
Isn't it? It's an added value sort of. I guess these guys, they want to feel safe. they have a lot of money. They're in a group of people. They're having these discussions, and they're one-upping each other as they do with their cars and their vacation homes. And now they've got the bunker. Well, where is that? Well, it's in New Zealand. And what kind of bunker is that? Well, it's got a pool, and it's underground, and I didn't report it to the authorities, and they have no clue about it. And, you know, my cigars, you know, I've got a bunch of these down there too. Don't worry, wink, wink.
Yeah, because, I mean, one psychologist called this sort of psychological Band-Aid, and he was actually talking about the situation in Israel, where they are also now just beginning to get into this new hobby, I suppose, of the uber rich, and building these nuclear proof bunkers. But he said, he made the point that you just need one bomb to drop, a nuclear bomb to drop on Tel Aviv, and the whole of Israel, basically, you knocked it out, you know, and probably most of Palestine as well in the process, you know, and it, nothing you can do about it. And then, okay, you got your bunker and you're in there, and you come out in 3 weeks or 3 months or whatever it is, or a year and a half. And what's there? There's nothing. I mean, you know, what are you going to do then? You know, are you going to sort of run a business? Well, there's nobody going to be around to buy your goods. I mean, it's totally insane, isn't it?
It is insane. There are underground cities as well that are in mountains in the U.S. This has been declassified information as well. Iron Mountain is, there's a number of them that are, the government has this contingency plan. So it may be a bit of a stem from that. I suppose it may be a trickle-down effect of this psychology. We need to fix the world. We don't need to wreck it for profit and then defend against the actions that we take to improve our financial standing against our fellow human beings. It's really nonsense. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, but we need to look far and wide at the problem and look far and wide at the possible solutions and start dealing with the actual issues rather than this nonsense about putting a bunker underneath ground zero. Doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, I mean, the trouble is, of course, once, as I was saying before, once one gets into the habit of putting these bunkers in property, then I guess military strategists could look at the whole issue of nuclear war in a different way. I mean, if you're able to protect your elite, if you're able to protect your military elite and your civilian elite and certain industrial production facilities, then I suppose the whole idea of a nuclear war, perhaps using a limited nuclear strike, as they say, would become more feasible. And then we really have to, I think, ask ourselves the question, is the human race by default insane? You know?
Yeah, I think you're a valid question, John. And unfortunately, we're already at the point where this calculation's been made. Nuclear strike is a viable option, according to the U.S. military. And you see them pushing. I mean, just recently, we have another, you know, downed jet by, I mean, there's only two nuclear triad countries in the world that I'm aware of. It's the U.S. and Russia. And triad, it means destroy the entire planet from air, sea, mm-hmm. or land. Mm-hmm. And there's only two that can do all three of those. And they're both right next to each other, making, suffering risks of things getting out of control. I mean, the Cuban missile crisis is nothing compared to what could happen any day now. And I wonder how many risks per year we need to endure before we start, you know, really looking at the problems and saying, look, you guys, no more profits from battles, okay? It just can't happen. We need punishable offenses here. We can't have, I'm in the employment industry. If I send a worker who trips and falls, they're going to look at me and say, have you done everything practicable to ensure that the incident of him tripping, whatever it was foreseen and prevented? Yeah. And if not, you know, I'm in some degree of trouble depending on a number of things. Nobody's looking at the 90%+ of civilians that are dying by bombs or the trillions of dollars transferred from these wars, from the social, you know, from the social environment into these private hands, which end up in the bunkers, mm-hmm. I would say. Mm-hmm. A lot of it ends up in the bunkers.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, Tate, down in New Zealand, which actually I think is a pretty amazing country, I find it personally too amazing. I could never live there. It's just too beautiful. You know, I prefer dirty, ugly cities, you know, with graffiti on them. Because that's where I was brought up and so on. I went there for holiday once and it was too nice, almost went insane. But in that little paradise down there that you call home now, what are the local residents, you know, what did New Zealanders feel about this bunker thing craze. I mean, do they think it's some sort of... tell me, please.
Yes, I don't pretend to repeat... In this case, I think the answer is quite clear. I don't think anyone will disagree with me. By and large, they believe it's nonsense, craziness. It's just more of this foreign thinking brought to their territory that makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
No. People coming here the community is relatively small, relatively sane. You know, they've got their problems, but when we argue about our problems here being locals, those of us who have lived abroad, as you have, and as I guess probably most of the listeners have, will understand that there's a relative aspect of a beautiful place like New Zealand or other country that you might visit or live in.
Yeah.
Whenever you talk about the problems, you have to keep the perspective. I mean, it's relatively cleaner, the crime is relatively lower, the government is less corrupt, the government doesn't generally start wars with anyone. That has happened before, but it's not happening now at all.
Yeah.
And they are still participating in Afghanistan, but there's probably about 3 or 30 soldiers or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, you're right. It's not something the society thinks is a good idea. In fact, that may also play a part in people keeping it quiet. They come here with their big money and they mostly live quiet.
Out of sight, out of mind. And I guess also there's this whole issue of your housing crisis and the amount of money that foreigners are spending on buying your exclusive and rich and nice and beautiful properties and ordinary New Zealanders being bought out. And we talked about it in the last program. And then to cap it all, on top of it, if that isn't bad enough, we get some of these properties now being sold with their own nuclear-proof bomb shelter, for heaven's sakes. You know, I mean, I can imagine if I was a New Zealander, you know, working with my hands, or even a teacher or something, and to read about this, and my salary, which I work, and I work hard to get my money, isn't probably enough in my whole lifespan to buy more than the porch, probably, of one of these places. And, I mean, how would I feel about that? I would be prepared to demonstrate, probably. I'm not inciting a right here, please. Don't get me wrong, authorities. I'm just saying I personally would be pretty upset about it.
Yes, some people are. I mean, Jack Ma has a quote, the Alibaba founder. He says that he's got 20 of his colleagues that have already retired in New Zealand. So there you go, Alibaba and half of the 40 thieves are already in New Zealand.
Yeah, so in fact, it's becoming a kind of, New Zealand in particular, is becoming a haven, a retirement haven for the ultra-rich. And that's the way it is, because it's just so nice, though. It's a nice place to live, you know, and that's why you live there, isn't it?
That's right. And to be fair, most New Zealanders have no resentment. They do laugh about this.
Yeah.
They do shrug it off for the most part. I don't think there's any boiling point happening, but it is a point of ridicule at this point. And also, I would say, as far as the housing prices, there is a bit of resentment creeping in there now, because our children collectively are not in a position to buy a house for their lifetime.
Yeah.
It's gone out of the, it's, unless they become, unless they go abroad and earn money and bring it back in, they're not going to be able to do that here. It just doesn't have the economy for it, generally.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I've got one final question, and that is, what suggestions have you got for people? I mean, how do we get out of this situation?
I think a lot of your listeners probably are tuning in because they like your show and they want to have a sense of what's going on. There are going to be people in there that are actually concerned about the world, and there are a lot of different concerns coming on. Let's face it, some things are happening now that haven't happened in the past.
Yeah.
And the scale of things with population, with money, with the industry, with the weapons, it's all gone up, and the threats have gone up. And it seems like the more money you get, the more insane you are. And then the more power it is, all this consolidation. And what do you do? And there is a response of people. They are doing certain things. What I would suggest is just bring it back down to really simple things, because we don't want to get overwhelmed. Let's just look at this. Okay, let's say the electrical grid goes out, something quite possible that could happen.
Yeah.
Turn off your own electricity as a test for your family. Do it on a Saturday, 24 hours, then talk on Sunday. How about the electricity? How about if we imagine if that happened in our community? What would we do? What other effects? How would that affect the store? It would start the discussion. So this might be a little bit of a pre-prep, a mental prep. to get what actually could happen. And that would, I think, set the mode and the mood for doing something productive rather than saving up all the canned vegetables and putting it into a container and then getting a big bolt for the container. Think practically, because you'll want to be making more of those things that you need, and you want to fit into the community. There might be a guy who's got a garden, but he doesn't have something that you can do.
Yeah.
And there's that relationship that you can develop. And there might be a family, they might be, well, a lot of them will be welcoming these sorts of discussions. These discussion groups are all over the place now.
Right.
So I just wanted to encourage, I suppose, anyone that I meet that there are wackos, but there are also practical ways to look at defending and preparing for events that can happen.
Yeah. Okay. That's absolutely wonderful. I think thank you very much for those suggestions. And it's definitely going to, I think I'm going to have to think about that seriously. All right. Well, I'm afraid we've got to wind up the program now, running out of time, but I am really grateful for you coming on the program. Tate Osaka, who's an environmentalist living in the Nelson area in New Zealand. And I'm grateful for you listeners. You've been listening to this program. It's unusual. We do a lot of unusual things on this program. I hope you appreciate our unorthodox look on the world. Goodbye. Tune in again next week.